We're up to the Gemara and Daf Hey Amud Beis. As mentioned, this Gemara is not difficult, and that's why we're going a little bit quicker than we ordinarily would. We're up to the Gemara and Daf Hey Amud Beis. It's about the 10th line from the top. The first word on the line is Mum. Mum over. The Gemara says, Yoira, Yoira. Remember we discussed yesterday that you have to have permission, like a type of smicha, as it were, in order to be able to paskin. And that is called Yoira, Yoira. Are you allowed to paskin halachas of Yoira Dea, Issa Veheta? Yoira, yes, you can. So the question is, why exactly is that needed? Surely, once you have studied the relevant material, so why would that not qualify you now to paskin? Why do you need this rishus? And this is what the Gemara now asks. Yoira, yoira, I gomar, gomir, if he has learned, gomir, like from the word Gemara, if he's learned, then rishusa lomoli, lamishkal, question mark. So why does he need to receive rishus? He's learned the relevant material, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, is now fully competent, you would have thought. So why do I now need specific Rishus to go and paskin Shailas? Says the Gemara, Mishum Maisa Shehoya, because of a particular story that once happened. And because of this story, it was instituted that you cannot paskin Shailas unless, in addition to learning, you've also received Rishus. What was the story? The Tanya we've learned in a Braisa. Pamachas, on one occasion, holach Rebbe lemokim echad. Rebbe went to a particular place, v'ro'o b'nei Odom, and he saw some people, shemegablin isoiseihem betuma. Megablin means mixing, isoiseihem, the word isa, dough. They were mixing their dough, betuma. What does that mean, betuma? Look at Rashi. Rashi is on the fifth narrow line. Betuma. Loi hoyu makpidin. They were not particular letaher kelehem, to purify their kelim. So Rashi is explaining, it doesn't mean they were megablin their dough with tuma. They actually had tummy items there. But they didn't seem to be makpid to be metaher the kelim. They seemed to be very easy going with the halachas of Tumah v'Tahara. Why is that? Omru loi, sorry, Omar lahem, so he said to them, Mipnei ma atem megablim iseiseichem b'tumah. So he asked them straight out, why are you being megabal your isa b'tumah? You don't seem to be particular about the laws of Tumah v'Tahara. Omru loi, so they said to him, well, Talmud Echod Bo Lakan. There was once a Talmud, meaning a Talmud Chacham, who came here and he taught us the following. V'hoire lanu, and he taught us, V'hoire, like the word Hoira, and he taught us that Mei Betzoim Ein Machshirin. What's Mei Betzoim? So look at Rashi. Mei Betzoim Agam. Agam is a pond. So water that comes from a pond, that's what this Talmud told us. Ein machshirin. What does it mean, ein machshirin, says Rashi? Ein machshirin. Umimeme betzoim onuloshin. We are doing the lisha, the kneading, with this mei betzoim, meaning it's not regular water, it's water from an agam, from a pond. And the Talmud once told us that water from a pond is not machshir anything, meaning it's not susceptible to tumah. Hilkoch, therefore, loy mekablo isa tumah. Therefore, the isa will not be mekabel tumah, i.e., we know there is a halacha in Hilchas tumah that foods can be makabel tuma, but only if they've come into contact with liquid. If they've come into contact once in their lifetime with a certain liquid, that's called machshir. We have a whole masechta called machshirin. It's machshir the food to be makabel tuma. So, for example, if I pluck an apple off a tree, and now that apple touches a dead body, the apple does not become tummy. Because it hasn't yet come into contact with seven liquids, it has to do so following its leaving from the tree. If I pluck the apple off the tree and then it comes into contact with one of the seven liquids, what are the seven liquids? The Rosh HaTeva says Yad Shochat Dam, which stands for Yain, and Dvash, and Shemen, and Cholov, and Tal, and Dam, and Mayim, any one of those seven prime liquids, if it comes into contact with those seven liquids, that's called that we have been Machshir the Oichel. And now, if it comes into touch with Tumah with a dead body, it'll become Tumah. So these people told Rebbe that, listen, we once heard, we were told by a Talmud, that mei betzoim, water that comes from a pond, is a special kind of water and is not machshir food. Therefore, this dough that we are kneading in a kli, we've got nothing to worry about. If you're wondering why it is that we're not being very particular about the halachas of Tumah, the answer is we don't need to be. Because how are we kneading this dough? Not with regular water, rather with mei betzoim. That does not constitute one of the seven liquids. And if that's the case, it kind of become tummy. So that's why we're not being makpid at all.
Next
That
quick
really,
question.
yeah.
So then why does it say that they were using Tomei Kalim and not Mayim?
It doesn't say they used the tummy. It says they were not being makpid on halachas of tumah. They didn't need to be concerned to metahir the keli, even if you would have a keli which is tamei.
It says
That
Shemagablin Isosei and Betuma.
right.
They
So
were using.
Rashi says they were not metahir their kelim, even if the keli was tamei, they were not concerned in the slightest. Why? Because the dough that was being kneaded inside the kli, even if the kli is tamei, will not in turn become tamei. Because it
Okay.
has not been in touch with one of the seven liquids. But you're kneading it with mei betzoim. So they said, yeah, but we were once told by a Talmud Chacham that mei betzoim is not machshir. Says the Gemara, that is a terrible mistake. Vahu, says the Gemara, really this Talmud told them mei beitzim. Barashlahu. When this Talmud Chacham gave them a drasha, he said, "May beitzim." They misunderstood. The inu savur, and they thought that it's may betzaim ka'amar. Says Rashi, "What's may beitzim from eggs?" Says Rashi, "May beitzim halosh isa." If somebody needs a dough, needs with a k. He needs a dough, but beitzim shel tarnegoles v'avos, with an egg of a chicken or a goose, which has liquid in the egg, and that can be used to knead a dough. That does not constitute one of the seven liquids. And that is what this particular Talmud Chacham told them. And they misunderstood. They heard the words mei betzoim, when in fact he said mei beitzim. So you see how careful you have to be. When you pass kashyas. And that's why the Gemara says it's not sufficient to have the knowledge. You also have to have a reshus to pass kashyas, because if not, you can end up with a story like this, in which somebody said, mei beitzim. Clearly, he did not spell it out clear enough. And it was understood to mean mei betzaim, and that's a terrible mistake. So from then on, it was instituted that even if you've learned the relevant material, But nonetheless, you have to have reshus from the Reish Kalusa to Paskan the Shaila. Because if not, then clearly you have not been trained how to Paskan Shailas. If you might well know the correct halacha, but not know how to teach it.
How would a reshus, if the guy had a reshus, been any different here? He misheard. He misspoke, they misheard. If he had reshus, it would have been the same problem.
If he has reshus, then he'll only be given reshus if the Reish Galusa is confident, then he'll spell it out clearly.
Nobody would, but even if he had reshus, right, he still would have made the same problem would have happened.
It
wasn't like he gave a, it wasn't like he gave
said,
a
Beitzin clearly, and he wouldn't have said it in a way that sounds like Meibetzin. So the Reish Galusa is not going to give reshus to somebody paskins, to somebody who doesn't talk clearly. You're going to test him. Let me see how you paskin a shaila. Let me see how you spell it out. Yes, on that basis, I can allow you to paskin. But if you mumble and fumble, such that when you say the word Meibetzin, it sounds a bit like Meibetzin, then I'm sorry. You might be a huge Talmud Chacham and have all the relevant knowledge, but you're incompetent with regard to paskening a shaila. You know, I'll tell you a funny story, which is maybe not so funny, but it just goes to show how a Rav can be misunderstood. My uncle Rav Zanga in Bnei Brak told me that he was actually once giving a shir on this subject of the halachas of losh, kneading on Shabbos. As we know, that under some circumstances, you're allowed to do losh on Shabbos if you do it with a shinui. Or complicated shailas, what exactly constitutes a shinui if you do it crisscross or you reverse the order. There's different types of processes that if you do the lisha in that way, that's considered a shinui. So somebody approached my uncle and said to him, what's the halacha of lisha b'yad smoil, with the left hand? So if I ordinarily do the kneading with the right hand, if I do lisha b'yad smoil, now I do it with the left hand, would that constitute a shinui? So my uncle said to him, absolutely not. When you knead a dough, it really makes no difference whatsoever whether you do it with the right hand or the left hand. It's not like when you write something. When you write something, then if you're a right-hander, and to do so with your left hand or vice versa, that's definitely a shinui. That's a very unusual way of doing it, and the product will clearly be different. But when you knead your dough, quite frankly, it makes no difference whether you do so right-handed or left-handed, and therefore, no, that's not considered a shinui. So he said to my uncle, well, with all due respect, you're wrong. Why so? He said, because actually I asked this question to Rabbi Eliashiv. I asked Rabbi Eliashiv this exact shaila, lisha, biyad smoil, is it muta? And Rabbi Eliashiv said, absolutely yes. So my uncle was unmoved and he said, I'm sorry, but I don't believe the story. He says, what do you mean you don't believe it? I was one who asked Rabbi Eliashiv. I'm not quoting somebody else. I personally asked Rabbi Eliashiv, what's the halacha of lisha, biyad smoil? And he said, it's muta. My uncle again was unmoved. Sorry, there must have been some misunderstanding. Either Rabbi Eliashiv misunderstood you or you misunderstood Rabbi Eliashiv, but there's no way in a million years that Lisha Biyad Smoil is a shinui. Well, the question was also unmoved. Sorry, you're wrong. I actually discussed it with Rabbi Eliashiv himself and he said it's not. So my uncle said, let me do some inquiries. One of the big Talmidim of Rabbi Eliashiv, he's actually American, lives in Shuafat. His name is Rav David Morgenstern. So my uncle contacted Rav David Morgenstern and said, I need to ask you a strange question. Rav David Morgenstern used to spend a lot of time with Rav Eliashiv, such that if somebody would ask Rav Eliashiv a question, the chances are that Rav David Morgenstern was there at the time, and he would have remembered it. He wrote down every shaila that he heard Rav Eliashiv being asked. He has tens and tens of thousands of shailas over the years that he's accumulated. So he asked Rav David Morgenstern, tell me, did somebody from Bnei Brak recently come to Rabbi Eliashiv and ask him, is Lisha Biyad Smoil Muta? And Rabbi Eliashiv said it's Muta? So Rav David Morgenstern burst out laughing and said, oh, that's funny you should say that. He said, I was there when this person asked the shaila, but I didn't hear him say Lisha Biyad Smoil. I'm assuming whatever I heard, Rabbi Eliashiv heard the same. He says, what do you mean? Why, what did you hear? He says, well, this person mumbled the question and it sounded for all the word like Le'isha B'yad Smoil. Not Lisha B'yad Smoil, Le'isha B'yad Smoil, meaning I understood, and I said, I presume Rabbi Eliashiv understood the same, that he was talking about the halacha and Hilchas Nida, that if a wife is a Nida, then you can't put food down directly in front of her. Or the wife cannot put food down directly in front of the husband. But if she does so with the left hand, that's considered an unusual way of placing down the food, and therefore that's mutter. So he asked Rabbi Eliashiv what sounded like Le'isha b'yad smoil, mutter? Rashi said, yeah, sure, it's mutter. Absolutely, it says so in the Shulchan Aruch. And he interpreted that to mean Lisha b'yad smoil. So you just see how careful one has to be. Mistakes can be made either if the question was not asked clearly or if the answerer, whoever's passing the Shaila, did not issue a clear psak.
The whole question to your
of
uncle
course.
Is a bit quick.
Of course, Rav Eliashiv was qualified to pasken shilas.
Right, but he can't be held accountable. Can't be held accountable if somebody mumbles Le'isha b'yad smol. Yeah.
The whole question to your uncle was chutzpah, Dick, because if you already had a psak from Eliashiv, what are you trying to catch your uncle in a mistake? What's the point in the question? You already have psak halacha. You already thought, so now you're going to ask me again? What, to prove that I'm not smart?
Welcome to the beautiful world of Rabbanus.
Thank you.
Larry, if you're thinking of becoming a Rav there, Netanya, give me a call first.
I already am the Risha Galusa.
Okay, so you can give Rishus. Just make sure you say Beit Sim clearly. I'll, by the way, tell you, if we're telling stories anyway, I'll just tell you, you know, we say Rabbi Eliashiv, how accurate, and you can't catch out the God Ladim. If somebody mumbles Le'isha b'yad smoil, that's one thing. But listen to this phenomenal story. There's a very, very big question. What happens? This was almost neger for us, but in the end it wasn't. When you have two babies to do a bris on. So the question is, in the end it wasn't neger for us because our twins had bris on different days. In fact, different years. One was before Rosh Hashanah, one was after. But I'll call upon him. There's a very big question. If a moel does a bris on two babies, how many brachas do you make? Do you make one or do you make two? So, for example, we all know that if I put up 10 mezuzahs in my house, I don't make 10 brachas. I make one bracha on all the mezuzahs. If I shecht 1,000 animals, I make one bracha and I shecht 1,000 animals, etc., etc., etc. So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch says that if you do a bris on two babies, one after the other, you make one set of brachas. That's it. So you literally have to do the brisim back to back. You make one bracha, and it's the same as a mezuzah or a shechita. You make one bracha on both. However, that is not the general minhag. I was once in the Gra Shul many, many, many years ago. Rav Kornfeld did a double bris on Shabbos morning, I remember, and he did not make one bracha. Rather, what they do is they make one bracha on the first bris mila. Then they make a little bit of a break, 10-minute break, and they sing Zmiras or say Divrei Torah. And then you do the second bris mila, and then you make a new set of brachas. So the Shulchan Aruch says one bracha. The general minhag seems to be two. Rebbe Eliashiv, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, it was very well known. He would pasken like exactly as it says in Shulchan Aruch. It was a well-known psak of Rebbe Eliashiv. Rebbe Eliashiv was fully aware that maybe the minhag was not that way, but as far as he was concerned, you go with the Shulchan Aruch. If you have twins, for example, one bracha. So a Talmid of Rebbe Eliashiv actually had twin boys. And he wanted to be Mechabed Rebbe Eliashiv to be a Sanduk at the first bris, and Rebbe Shlomo Zalman Oyebach at the second bris. Problem is, if Rebbe Eliashiv would know that it's twins, then you've got to do both brisim back to back. So there's no two sanduks. Because Rebbe Eliashiv holds, you've got to do the brisim one after another, one bracha. So you literally do one and then straight the other one. So you couldn't be mechabed two people to be the tzaddik. So he thought of a great trick. He did not tell Rabbi Eliashiv that it was twins. He just told Rabbi Eliashiv, listen, I had a baby boy. I'm making a bris next week, 9 o'clock in the morning. Could the Rav be a tzaddik? And he knew that Rabbi Eliashiv doesn't hang about. He comes 30 seconds before the bris, and as soon as the bris is finished, he leaves. Ah, great. So Rabbi Eliashiv is not going to know bichlal that there's a second baby who's going to have a bris in 10 minutes' time. Then he approached Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and said, listen, I had twins. Rabbi Eliashiv is going to be the tzaddik at the first. Would you be able to be the tzaddik at the second bris at 10 past 9 at 9:15? Yeah, fine, no problem. Okay, so all is going plain sailing. 9 o'clock, as arranged. Rabbi Eliashiv turns up at the hall literally on the dot of 9 o'clock. He was very, very punctual. He came in, he sat down. He was a tzaddik. The bris was finished. Mazel tov, mazel tov. And as predicted, he immediately left the hall. Never said a word about twins. Nobody said anything about twins. As far as he was concerned, there was one baby. Fine. They sang some Zemiras. They said a few Divrei Torah. 10 minutes later, they do the second bris, and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was a tzaddik. And what could be better than that? So Rabbi Eliashiv was a tzaddik for one, Shlomo Zalman for the other. A few years later, this particular Talmid received an offer to be a rav of a shul in Chutz La'aretz, I'm not sure where. So he went to his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliashiv, and he said, listen, I've received this offer and I'm applying for the job. Could you write me a letter of recommendation, a hamlotza? Could you write me a letter? So Rabbi Eliashiv looked at him and said, you're going to become a rav? He said, yes, mitzvah Hashem. So he said, well, presumably that means you're going to pass Kanshailas. He said, yes, obviously, that's part of the job. So Rabbi Eliashiv said, okay, let me ask you, just as an example, what would you paskin if there's twin babies, how many brachas, one or two? Quite phenomenal story. This was years after the event. You cannot trick the God Ladoi. Rabbi Eliashiv knew full well, I don't know how, that it was twins. But no, she didn't say anything because it's not going to make a fuss. But a few years later, he says, no, what are you going to paskin? How many brachas at a twin bris, one or two? So you cannot pull the wool over Rabbi Eliashiv's eyes. But al kaponim, you do learn from this Gemara how careful somebody has to be when you paskin shailas, otherwise it could be misunderstood. Like we see in our Gemara. Betzoim can be understood when in fact what was said was beitzim. Okay, now the Gemara continues the story. Says the Gemara, v'to'u nami b'hal. In fact, they made another mistake as well. Why? Because we have a Mishnah that says as follows. May karmioin umei pigo pesulin. Mipnei shehein mei betzoim. Now, what does that mean? What's this talking about? This Mishnah is not in Machshirin. This Mishnah is in Masechtas Para. Have a look at Rashi. The halacha is, when it comes to Para Aduma, you remember the pasuk, V'nosan Mayim Chaim El Keli. You've got to take Mayim Chaim and put it in a kli, and then you mix it with the ash of the Para Aduma. And the big question is obviously, what is Mayim Chaim? Literally translated, alive water. Well, what does that mean? What's Mayim Chaim? So the Mishnah there says in Para, as Rashi explains, Karmiyain upiga, Nahorois, they are rivers, shall agamim, coming from ponds. An agam is a pond. Which means it's not a natural water supply. Maim chayim means a natural water supply. For example, a ma'ayan, which is a natural spring of water. That's Mayim Chaim. But if it's sitting in the pond, being artificially collected, and then it flows from there into a river, that's not considered Mayim Chaim. Therefore, says Rashi, Psulim, Lemei Chatos. The water which you use for Paraduma is called Mei Chatos, and it's posel. Why is this water posel? Mipnei Shehein Mei Betzoim. Because again, it's water from Betzoim, meaning from a pond. The Onu Mayim Chaim El Keli, quote unquote, Bo'inon, we require. We require natural water. The water that's been collected in Betzoim will not constitute Mayim Chaim. That is a Mishnah in Poro. Now look back into the Gemara. The last word on the line. V'to'u, and they made a mistake. Nami b'hor, they made another mistake. Not only did they misunderstand the Talmud who told them that Mei Beitzim is not Machshir, and they thought that means Mei Betzoim. That was mistake number one. They then, by the way, made another mistake. Why? Because it says in the Mishnah in Parah, Mei Karami Yainu Mei Piga Psulin Mipnei Shehein Mei Betzoim, quote unquote. The Mishnah says that this water from the pond is possible because it's Mei Betzoim. Ve'inu Sovur, and they thought, Me de legabe chatos, if with regard to a Parah Aduma, Psili, comma, it's possible, as we just mentioned. Then achshuri nami loy machshuri, period. So we're comparing over here two different halachas. One halacha we're talking about is what type of water qualifies for Parah Aduma. Another question, what type of water will be machshir food in order to make it susceptible to Tumah? So they learned the Mishnah in Parah and they made the comparison. What did they say? That if it says in the Mishnah in Parah that waters may betzoim does not qualify for Parah Aduma. So how do they understand that? Oh, it would seem to be that may betzoim is not considered water. So they say, well, we can copy and paste and say for the same price, therefore, it will not be machshir our dough because it's not considered water. Apparently, pond water is not considered water. If it's not good enough for Parah Aduma, then it won't be machshir food either. Well, that's a very terrible mistake. Why is it a terrible mistake? Says the Gemara, v'loi hi. But it's not true. Hosam, over there with regard to Parah, which by the way, we always refer to as Chatos. Hosam le'inyin Chatos, bo'inon, we require, quote unquote, im chayim. We underline the word Chaim, meaning you misunderstood the Mishnah in Parah. When the Mishnah in Parah said that pond water is not good, it doesn't mean because it's not considered water. It is water. So what's the problem? With regard to Parah Aduma, there's a certain type of water which is required. What is that? Only Mayim Chaim. So nobody said that this is not Mayim. We just said it's not Mayim Chaim. But Hocha, over here, with regard to Machshirin, what type of water, when coming into contact with food, will make it susceptible to Tumah? We don't need Mayim Chaim. Hocha, Achshuri, when it comes to Heksha, Koldahu Machshiri. Any type of water is Machshir. So you totally made a complete miscomparison over here. Let's give an example. Water that comes out of a tap, is that mayim? Absolutely, it's mayim. Is it kosher for a mikveh? No, because it happens to be shuvim. So if somebody tells you that water that comes out of a tap doesn't qualify for a mikveh, it would be a terrible misunderstanding to say, ah, so apparently tap water, it's not considered water at all. And it won't be machshen oicha lekabel tumah. No, terrible mistake. Of course it's water. It's not mikvah water. So too over here as well. Mayim in the Betzoim, in the ponds, is absolutely water, and it will be Machshir. Why doesn't it work for Parah Aduma? Because Parah Aduma needs a very specific type of water, which is Mayim Chaim. It's not Mayim Chaim, but it's definitely Mayim. Therefore, these people made a double mistake. Number one, in what they heard. Number two, in what they learned. With regard to what they heard, so they heard that the Magid Shir said, "May Betzoim," when in fact really he said, "May Beitzim." That was the first mistake. Second mistake is that they learned the Mishnah in Pora, and they copied and pasted. They compared Pora to Machshirin, which is a terrible mistake, because Pora requires a very specific type of water. Machshirin doesn't. So because of, yeah.
So doesn't this lend itself to explain really what why you need a rishus? Not because you didn't hear well, he didn't speak well, you got to be clear. Forget that. The rishus is because you're not qualified. You completely miscombobulated a Torah svara. Now you're going to psach halacha. It's not whether you heard or didn't hear. That's one issue. But the rishus issue comes because if you're not qualified, you will take something that's this and you will turn it upside down.
Look at the next line, says the Gemara, Tana, Ba'oisei Shah. At that time, Gozru, a decree was made. Talmud al Yaira. Even if you're a Talmud Chochem, you cannot paskin any Shaila, whether it's for other people or for yourself. Ela imkein noitel rushus miraboy. The decree came into being because of that story. Now, why, if you get reshus from your rab, will you be better off? So look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Noitel reshus miraboy. V'chi yoiv le raboy reshusay. When his rab gives him reshus, meidak dayek be. He will be extra particular. Sheyehi l'shoinoy patuach. That his mouth should be clearly open and his diction should be clear. V'loy yitu hashemin es devarov, so that the listeners will make no mistake. So it seemed to be that the whole gezerah of Rashus was brought into being based on, as you said, Larry, based on these two factors. Number one, they didn't speak clearly. Number two, if you learn something, you may make the wrong comparison. And therefore, you have to have psak. You have to know what the halacha is. And not just to say, well, if this is the case in Hilchos Parah Aduma, then can't I just presume that the same would be in Machshirin? No, you can't presume. You have to have Rishus from your Rebbe. Okay, we have to hold it over here. We'll meet tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. You know, everyone should feel well.
Okay.